Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. It's time for episode 101 of Destroy All Culture with Aiden Morgan and me, Adam P. Nave.
101.
We tried recording this already. We ran about 2 minutes before we had catastrophic failure. So.
Yep.
Let's see what happens.
The stakes aren't NASA mission high for that, but it's not fun when you suddenly sort of cut out and you don't know what you're doing.
You are dropping out majorly again already.
Oh really? Oh, for pity's sake.
Yep. Let's keep going and see what happens. I was talking about trees. The last time we were doing this, and again, my neighbor on one side has what trees. He has a Tree of Heaven infestation. If you don't know Tree of Heaven, it's basically a weed. It is terrible. Its sap smells like burnt peanut butter.
Ugh.
And it's like a light neurotoxin.
What kind of tree is this?
Right, it's a weed, and it grows incredibly fast. Like, we're talking, like,
wow.
You know, 6 inches a month type of incredibly fast.
Is this kudzu or something?
It isn't, but, like, it'll grow to, like, tree size if you're not careful, very quickly. And it sends out runners, like vine runners, under the ground, so it can just, like, show up, like, 50 feet to the left suddenly. So, like, you have to patrol shit, like, all the time to make sure it's not in our yard, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this guy has, like, back problems, so he doesn't do much stuff, and, you know, other neighbors help him out, but there's this grove next to the fence that he shares with us, with just tons of these fucking Tree of Heaven shoots.
Ugh.
And so, it also has, like, some butterfly trees, which sound pretty, but are also invasive and just insidious, and so they've been cutting them all down. Which is great. It won't actually get rid of them. The only way to get rid of Tree of Heaven is actually to destroy all of them in an area, drill holes in every stump, and put, like, weed killer in the holes to poison the root systems. Otherwise, it still sends out runners. But this will at least keep it back and you know, save it for, like, a year or two. But it does mean that there have been chainsaws all day for the last week. But worse, in the back corner of his property, where I can see it from my office window, it's what I stare at all day when I'm working, there was this giant laurel, like, taller than the house. Big, you know, year-round green leaves. I use it to judge the weather, frankly.
Besides
just being something nice to look at, you know. But it's been getting really big, and it's been blocking the neighbor behind him, like, blocking, like, his, like, light and all this crap. So they decided to cut that back, and they cut back so much of it. And I'm just like, you're destroying my personal view. I understand that you are in your right to do this. Right. I understand that it is actually better for you, but it's worse for me personally.
I understand. So are you going to, like, sue your neighbor
I'm going to do absolutely nothing.
Okay.
I'm going to do absolutely nothing, because this is all, again, within his rights and the other neighbor's rights, and their right to do it, frankly, because you have to control this stuff. I'm just a little sad because my, you know, like, big green view is now, like, kind of green.
Kind of green. I think from my understanding of the United States, in situations like that, the first thing you do is just sue the person for all he's worth, like I said.
It is a thing that happens way too often.
We get a kick out of it here in Canada.
Yeah, you know, look, I got... To give you an idea where I stand on it, you gotta keep... Remember, I got hit by a car when I was 11. Okay?
I did not know this.
And... Let's see if you're still there. It was kind of partially my fault, but I was 11, and the guy was doing, like, 60 down a side street in Manhattan. Which...
Whoa.
Now, A, makes it his fault, but B, I gotta be honest, he should get some kind of credit, because if you ever been in Manhattan... Going that fast down the side street, like, that's not easy.
I was actually thinking, like, how do you even manage this in the first
Right.
place? Yeah.
I was like, that's kind of heroic. Like, you don't get mad at this guy. You're just like, well played, sir. You know?
Right.
But of course, like, you know, because, like, he was technically at fault and all this, so, like, you know, and, like, it did kind of screw up my legs for, like, the rest of my life and whatever. I mean, not terribly or anything, but it could have. And did some damage. And, like, oh, well, you could sue him. And I was like, why? And, like, I remember because I like, had talked to, like, a judge about this because they were like, you know, well, you're a minor, but, like, you still do legally get to decide this. And I'm like,
Oh.
why would I, like, just ruin this guy's life? Because he did a stupid thing once. Like,
Well, that is very generous of you.
I was
Because
like,
not
I'll
many
get
people.
better.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, I'll have, like, some, like, joint problems. So what? Like, everyone eventually has them. That's fine. And again, like, just the idea of, like, ruining someone's life because they fucked up once is just, in a way that didn't, you know, completely ruin, like, someone else's life. Because that didn't completely ruin my life at all. So, like,
Yeah, yeah.
why would I fuck with him? Like, what do I gain out of it? Except, like, money, which is always nice to have. But again, like, at what cost? And I just,
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, if he'd
So
like,
I.
you know, knocked your legs into a tree or something, that maybe then, but
Right, well,
other than
yeah, if he destroyed my view, it'd be a different story.
that. You, my view's less green because of my legs going through the tree, you bastard. I'm suing. Yeah. That'd be weird.
But yeah, I don't get it, the raw entitlement of like you screwed up my day,
Yeah,
so I'm going to
I
ruin
quite
your
agree.
life.
Yeah. Yeah,
But again,
I'm
I'm
always
apparently an
amazed by
outlier
that.
here.
Yeah. Well, like I say, come to Canada. We don't really do much of that here. I mean, I have a feeling if it were easier for that to happen, if it were more sort of set up in the legal system, we'd probably do this more, but it's not as easy to lawsuits are there's different standards. I was
Yeah, I
sued
mean,
once, and it turned out it's tough to sue somebody, fortunately for me.
well, like the thing is, like I have like part of my homeowner's insurance, seriously, is a specific thing that like if you get injured on my property, like if you for whatever reason like some guy walks onto my lawn because they feel like it and trip and break their leg, technically they could sue me.
Right.
And I'm just like, but no.
Yeah.
So I'd have like specific insurance to cover for that. I'm like, why?
No. Yeah. I
I
mean, I think that's
okay.
actually possible here. Actually, one thing is, if you're in most Canadian cities, I think in just pretty much all of them, like you shovel your sidewalks, and if somebody, you know, trips and breaks their leg, well, you're kind of on the hook for that.
Right.
But this city sucks for that. Nobody shovels their sidewalks here. It is so ingrained, like the no not shoveling our sidewalks in this city is so ingrained into the culture that recently one of the city councilors tried to spearhead a bylaw that was incredibly toothless. It basically said if you don't shovel your sidewalk repeatedly, will maybe somebody will come out and say, please shovel your sidewalk. And if you continue not to do it, the city will do it and it'll get thrown on, like the charge will get thrown onto your property taxes. But
Right.
it has to go for a while before that happens. So we had people coming to city council talking about our city turning into a police state because
Good
they're so
Lord.
enraged at the notion that they would have to shovel their sidewalks because our city hates pedestrians. Everybody drives here. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's there's a lot of that here too. I mean, not that it doesn't like pedestrians, but there's not as much like when it snows, like there's no real. Well, I said like the city even doesn't plow much. You know, they plow like some
Oh,
major
okay.
streets, and that's about it.
Right.
And like the last time we had like a foot of snow, like the supermarket didn't even fully plow its own parking lot.
Oh, that's okay.
Which I mean, it was like dangerous, and I don't get that because again, I'm from you know New York, where if you don't like if you have a business, or own a building at all, like you have to shovel the sidewalk in front of the place by like 6 a.m.
Right.
or you get like a major fine.
Yeah, that's yeah. There's, I mean, that's kind of similar here. Although lots of businesses are shit about doing it, but Man, oh man.
Oh no, I had a friend who worked for Starbucks for a while, and like there was a really bad snowstorm, and he was like, "Yeah, no, it sucks because like I'm supposed to be opening, which now means I have to show up like 2 hours early because we have to shovel the sidewalk." Yeah, no, New York takes it seriously because again, it's a pedestrian city.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and this it's place a slightly different is just thing. Not really.
Weirdly, somehow this turning into lawsuits fits with, I finally watched an older movie, I guess older, like this year, I guess, but
or last
it was firmly
year?
Out
yeah.
on like home video. Yeah.
Firmly on home.
Molly's Game.
Now firmly on home video.
Which I believe you have seen as well.
I have.
Game? Yes. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. How did I even know what you were going to talk about? Maybe it's like we actually decided beforehand what we would talk about.
It, you know, sometimes we get crazy and actually think about this shit for like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Let's not get ridiculous. But yeah, no, so I finally saw Molly's Game, and, you know, we're both Sorkin fans.
Yes. I liked me a Sorkin.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm fond of a Sorkin.
Yeah. So what did you think of Molly's Game?
Well, I liked it. I did have a weird moment where I had a realization.
Oh, do tell.
Okay, so you know how let me just start from a weird place on this. Idris Elba is the Harrison Ford of Sorkin.
Oh, I like that. Okay.
In the way that if you watch something like Star Wars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the original three movies.
Right.
You know, Lucas over-directed people and insisted on really bad line readings, frankly.
Yeah,
which was the problem
with
the prequels and all this. But you notice that didn't infect Harrison Ford. And if you
look
at like, interviews with him, when he was just like, fuck you can't, no one can say this shit. And he just did his own delivery anyway and refused.
Yeah.
But Lucas let him have it because it was Harrison fucking Ford.
Fair enough.
Like, there's just something about him where it's just like, nah, he's going to do what he wants and we're going to be okay with this.
Yeah, he had barely been in movies at that point, too.
Right.
So it's like,
but he
it's
was
kind
Harrison
of
Ford.
Amazing. Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like Idris Elba's the same thing. Like, listening to him do... Most actors, when you hear them do Sorkin dialogue, you can tell this is not how they normally do readings, even when they're good at it. If you watch, like, Brad Whitford, even, do West Wing versus do another show, it's a very different delivery system. You know, like Josh Charles, same thing.
Yeah.
But they are masters at delivering Sorkin dialogue, don't get me wrong. But watching Molly's Game, I'm like, no, Idris Elba's just doing Idris Elba. Like, he's not doing the Sorkin thing. He's delivering the lines, you know, but he's just doing Idris Elba, like, the hell with you.
Yeah.
And it works, because, of course it does, because that's why he's Idris Elba. But that just kept, like, making me laugh. In that sort of way of, like, not even Sorkin could overpower, like, the innate Idris Elba-ness of Idris Elba.
So in this case, is Jessica Chastain the Mark Hamill of Sorkin?
No. I mean, I think again, I think she did a really good job as well.
She did. She no.
But
she
again,
did.
You could tell, like,
yeah.
But you could again, you could tell that like she was doing Sorkin.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. You know, that's what you're there for.
And I think the difference between, say, George Lucas's writing and Aaron Sorkin's writing is that actors probably really enjoy doing Sorkin as opposed to doing a Lucas line, they're roundly, it's bad dialogue that he's like bent on making even worse by his direction. Yeah.
So, no, I did like the movie. I thought, as a first-time director who has been hanging around, like, you know, Fincher and other big directors for years, there are still these moments where you could feel it, that, like, Sorkin's like, look at me, I can do fancy stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of, like, distract a little bit. and aren't consistent. You know, like there's one or two points where he's talking about a specific card hand, and some of them he uses like a trick, and not a trick, but like some of them he visualizes and shows you, like with overlays, here are the cards, here's how this lines up and all this, and sometimes he doesn't bother. Like
there's
a little bit of a lack of consistency, to where he only did it occasionally, and it sort of makes sense that he's only doing it to make a certain point, but it's noticeable that there's no consistency.
Right.
It's things like that. Like, a lot of his shots, it's competent work. It's above what a lot of first-time directors would do, obviously. But I can kind of feel that there's the occasional shot where I'm like, oh, you wanted to do a Fincher shot here.
Or something like that. Yeah, or ones, I noticed that there were shots where I thought, there's probably a different way to do this, but you didn't have the experience or the sort of the time to get what you wanted, you know. And so every so often it feels like a lot of it takes place in one room, like, you know, right. Or in a couple of rooms. So it feels in many ways sort of like a very long television show.
Yeah, it felt
makes sense because that's where Sorkin's from, right? So there you go.
Right. I mean, and again, like, I don't think this was a negative to it necessarily, but the story itself, for the most part, took place in one or two rooms, right?
Right. Exactly.
So I get it that he basically did like a bottle episode movie, but at the same hand, yeah, there's that feeling of like you could have been more inventive with, like, just some of the places you had like a room layout or that you did stuff,
right,
and get a better sense of space.
Yeah. And it's funny because when I watch a movie with Sorkin's written, what you kind of instinctively have come to like expect is the walk and talk, you know, and there's
right.
surprisingly little walking and talking at the same time here. It's a lot of sitting, and it's weird to see that with a Sorkin dialogue.
Well, and a lot of that was Tommy Shalhoub doing stuff from, you know, Sports Night and West Wing, but if you look at something
right.
like Social Network, there's not a lot of it either.
That's true.
Like,
that's
feature
true.
Directors,
I mean,
feature directors are like, we'll just shoot around it and just get the shot with a lot of different angles that you couldn't take the time for multiple takes and multiple setups on TV,
mm-hmm.
so you don't need them.
Yeah.
Because they are kind of sometimes unnatural.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, of course, Fincher, I think, is skilled enough that he can have a fairly static shots and you don't really notice it because he's really good at sort of just getting to the heart
yeah.
of the scene. Oddly enough, I don't like the way Fincher directs movies, but I recognize that he's really good at it, so there you go.
I tend to like the way he directs some movies. It's one of those things like I it depends on the story he's telling, but his style doesn't change enough for me.
Right. I get you. I remember watching Seven. Everybody was raving about Seven, and I was like, "This is kind of stupid." that's all I could think about what the movie was like. This is like overheated junk. But I think when I watched it with that in mind, I very much enjoyed it. But
the first time I saw Seven, and you know, we hadn't seen Fincher before,
right?
Really,
except for Alien.
Well, sure, but who really watched that? And it was just, there were a few moves that were like, oh, this is a guy who's really thought this out. And things like Fight Club is you know, an impeccable bit of movement directorially. And so, you know, sure, there's that feeling that you should give him a bit of work. I think really the best thing he's ever directed, though, is Social Network, if only because he had to play moderator between Sorkin's dialogue and Reznor's score, which don't really fit together well unless and until you had Fincher finding ways to make them merge.
Yeah.
Like, he had to walk a tightrope for that entire fucking movie and did.
So the Social Network, from your view, is the best Fincher movie, but do you have a favorite Fincher movie? You know the distinction here, obviously.
I do know what you mean. Like, I feel like Fight Club, I mean, the message of Fight Club, if you take it seriously and not as a warning, is a dangerous, terrible thing. But in terms of a movie, I think it's just it's an incredible bit of cinema.
Yeah, it very much.
Just a great merging of, I think it's greater than the sum of its parts, if you know what I mean.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. I actually saw it by kind of by accident because we'd bought tickets to see a different film. We'd bought tickets to see U571 with Harvey Keitel in it, and me and my girlfriend at the time we walked in, and I think we watched the first like 15 minutes, and we just looked at each other and went, "This movie sucks." So we just sort of skedaddled out and walked into the only other movie that was about to start, which turned out to be Fight Club, and which was, yeah. And so I mean, I knew that it was playing, but I didn't know anything about it, and it was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
So although my favorite Fincher movie is Zodiac.
See,
I'm
that's
a
it.
big
It's like I
fan
don't
of
think I've watched
Zodiac.
all of Zodiac yet.
Ah, yeah, it's sort of you can pick it up and put it down. I just really enjoy the. It just feels closest. There's different parts of Fincher, and one of the things he seems to really enjoy, he likes pulpy junk, and he loves obsessiveness, because he himself is an
Yeah.
obsessive person who seems to love pulpy junk. And Zodiac for me is where those two things meet, like in this like obsessive quest to find the Zodiac killer, and it's just a movie that's just about detail and procedure and outright failure, and that I'm like, yay, that's what I like, for detail and failure.
Yeah.
So there's something about it. I don't know. It's just I also like movies that seem to like take a long time and really sort of set their own pace, and they're just like they're just. Basically say, this is what I'm doing. You can get on board or not, but here we go. So, yeah,
Right.
I do enjoy it. Yeah. So anyway, that's something Mindhunter kind of reminded me of Zodiac. It's the same
Okay.
sort of territory, I think.
That's fair. Yeah, no, it's one of those I always
Yeah.
mean to go watch. It's just very long.
It is long. Yeah, it is a long film. It's true.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. I don't know. It's one of those I keep meaning to go to, but there's always so many new things.
The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is not my favorite David Fincher film.
Oh God, that movie.
Or his
But
best
again, I
work.
didn't like the book either.
Yeah. No, I actually find that whole I can't remember the author's name. Sven or Stig or whatever.
Stig Larsson?
Stig Larsson, Stig Larsson, that's it. Stig of the Dump. Stig of the Book. Anyway. Yeah, I find the I don't know. It feels like murder mystery Twilight or so. I don't. It's the maybe and even the translation seems like a clumsy job of writing. So
Yeah, I kind of get why they became so big. I mean, partially it was because he died.
yeah.
But I just, they always felt like kind of vaguely insulting. Like it's a magic pixie girl story. It really is.
It is, and I see the intent, and the intent is wholesome, in a way that is. But yeah, it just seemed like so simplistic that it didn't. I
Yeah.
just felt myself going, "Oh, come on, come on."
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, Molly's Monogram, I think was a really good Sorkin. Like again, it feels like kind of Social Networky. Like I like this kind of
Yeah.
slightly tighter, new movies version of Sorkin, where he still lets himself have like the big speeches. The one thing, of course, that makes me laugh really hard is you know some directors have like those tics. Like you can't watch a John Woo movie without waiting for dubs.
Yes.
No, seriously, like when I watched Mission Impossible 2, I was just like, so where are the.
Where
Oh,
are the
there they
dubs?
are.
Yeah, no, me too. No,
When he
that's
was
like
rumored to
it was.
direct He-Man, I was like, are we gonna get weird, like, Eternia dubs?
Oh, that would be so cool. Oh man, I wish he'd done that. Oh
But,
hey, isn't he remaking The Killer? Or
someone is, I
one
don't
of
know
the
if it's him.
killers. Oh, okay. Anyway.
It might be. But anyway, no, Sorkin's whole weird obsession with, and now, like, this main character is going to read off their resume.
I mean, no,
you don't
I don't know
notice
how I
it
never
all the
noticed
time.
That.
Yeah, no,
oh
you
my
don't always
God.
notice it, but like think about it. Think about like every time, like sports night, it's like the first time we meet like Jeremy, there's his fucking resume. Everyone who gets angry at somebody the first time you see them, like if especially
Yeah.
the first time you see them they're angry, they're like, you know, I'll have you know, I graduated this, I did this, I did this, I did this, like every single time.
Yeah.
It's all throughout West
Yeah.
Wing. And
Yeah,
Molly's
well, I
game does
think
it right up front.
Yeah, that's true.
And I just started laughing.
Oh my God. I would I now that you mention it, it's so obvious. I would go as far as to say that people in Sorkin shows don't necessarily recite their resume, they whip it out.
Yeah, no, they really do.
That's yeah.
And again, it's hysterical. But it's also one of those things of you could quite, like a decent editor could quietly snip it out of almost every single time he uses it and you wouldn't notice.
Right. But I'm sure, well, obviously Sorkin wants it in there.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, no, it's like all of his characters have to tell you where they went to college at some point.
That's true.
And like I if I ever meet Sorkin, like I assume that he's gonna do that. Like he must. He must just be like, you know, how you doing? Nice to meet you. Like, hey, how you going? He's like, pretty good. You know, I
Pretty
went
good.
to and just like
I went to Brown, you asshole.
I did this and this and then you're like, dude, I'm not hiring you for it. Like, shut up.
I just
holy
asked if you
shit.
wanted cold foam on your latte, sir.
Right? Yeah, everyone at Starbucks like just notes his professional history whether they want to or not. Taking like 40 minutes at the drive-through, like just did you want pickles or not? Jesus Christ!
Nice.
Which I suppose is overall better than like you know John Woo going to the drive-through and just releasing doves in every McDonald's. It's so if you have to choose the one that's not like a health inspection problem, I
That's right.
guess.
Do I, Mr. Wu, do I have to go bring the doves back? Yes.
It's in the, I just figured no, he just has like a dispensary in his car.
Like
He drives around in
a
like a
whole
minivan, the entire back is just like full of doves.
doves. That, yeah.
Just
Oh
two at a
God.
time.
Yep, just some doves and some and a bit of like soaring music that he plays to go with it.
Right, yeah. They're
Oh
trained.
yeah.
They hear the music and two of them are just like, fuck, that's us. Come on, Bob.
Get
Freedom! You
it
know?
together, Terrence. Oh, okay. Blah, 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 blah.
He'd make a terrible magician. It's like the only trick he has.
Exactly, but it's just like and at the end, like the room would be just filled with doves.
And dove shit everywhere.
And dove shit everywhere. Yeah, I actually wondered about that at one point when I was watching a John Woo film. I'm like, there must be somebody whose job it is like to clean up the pigeon shit
Oh
off
yeah.
the set
Oh
after the
yeah.
doves are released. It's probably the
You
wrangler.
know that
Probably
there is.
that's, yeah. I bet the wrangler doesn't have to deal with that. Wrangler probably has like a cleaner that works
Yeah,
with
of
the
course. I mean,
wrangler.
there is. There's some, like, intern.
Yep. Some poor
Like, low
bastard.
level assistant who's making,
Yeah.
like, you know, union scale and goes home every night. It's like, well, how was your day? I spent it with a shovel and a mop, sir. It's.
Exactly. Just cleaning up after John Woo's frickin' doves. God damn it.
Yep.
Although
Yeah,
I got to
that's
admit, I
what they
was
do.
so when I watched Mission Impossible 2, I was so tickled by not by the doves, but by watching Tom Cruise getting put through John Woo's like tics. It was kind of awesome. And mostly because like he just ran around and kicked people a lot. That was I just watched that movie and it was like after like the fourth or fifth action scene, I was like, is that all he does? He just runs up and kicks people and then shoots in slow motion? I guess so. Anyway.
Yeah. Hey, you know, if it works.
Yeah. There's a great shot in Mission Impossible 2, which is just basically Tom Cruise like flipping and kicking at the same time in like this glorious slow motion. He must have been taking like lessons or something, and he really wanted to work like get in his like he wanted to show his work on screen.
Right, yeah, well, I mean, who doesn't?
Exactly.
Yeah, the Mission Impossible movies are so weird for me because, like, I have some friends who absolutely adore them because they're silly candy, you know.
Oh yeah.
But like, I remember being really excited when the first one came out because that was back when we still thought Tom Cruise was like a normal human being. And,
right. That's true.
And it wasn't like anything we had seen, you know. And it didn't really feel like Mission Impossible, but that was okay. Like, because Mission Impossible was all about the team, and this felt very much like this was just Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
And I liked it all right, you know.
Yeah.
I saw the second one, and I was like, meh, I didn't really care. And yeah. I couldn't stand them at all until the Brad Bird one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Brad Bird one was like, that one just knocked it out of the park. That yeah.
Right. But then I made the mistake of watching the one after that.
Was that the one? I don't remember which one. Was that the Christopher McQuarrie one? I can't remember.
Yes. I believe so. Because
there's one with Rebecca Ferguson in it. The one before, the last one, I guess. I don't know if we're on, I don't know if it's number 6 or number 7 coming up. Honestly, it's all a mystery to me.
6. Yeah, no, Rogue Nation was the last one, which was McQuarrie.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
And it felt like a low-rent Brosnan Bond script.
Yeah, the script was not great. One thing I did love about Mission Impossible 6 was it introduced me to Rebecca Ferguson.
Sure.
And she I don't know, I was just like, she walked on the screen, and every scene with her in it is lit differently than the rest of the movie. Because they basically looked at her and said, holy shit, she looks like an Ingmar Bergman film character. Of a particular sort of movie star look you don't see anymore. Let's blast her with some classic lighting. And it just transformed every scene. And I felt like I was watching a much better film.
Happy to know then that the next one, 6, Fallout is the name of it, is again McQuarrie and has Rebecca Ferguson.
I know. I'm kind of excited. Also, it's got Henry Cavill's mustache, which
this is true.
I just want to watch that and say, oh, look at that mustache. You're what fucked up Justice League, aside from all the other stuff.
Yeah, I'm like, that really was not the cardinal sin of Justice League.
No, it wasn't. But it's kind of there's something about
it's the symbol.
It's the symbol. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I have to say, it's easy to dunk on Justice League, but I remember watching it and thinking, it's a bit of a mess. The mustache thing doesn't look great, but I've seen, and the villain's bad, but there's lots of it that I enjoyed.
It's interesting, because I think, and Justice League, and I'm pretty sure we had discussed this at the time, but
I think my
big problem with Justice League was that it suffered really badly from coming out near Ragnarok. Because we had most Kirby interpretation and the single worst Kirby interpretation.
Exactly.
Back to back.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there is. Well, yeah, it was weird. It was one movie that took everything like really funny and joyful and cool about Kirby. Another one that took like not even the worst parts of Kirby so much as the fact that all the dumb shit that has been done with Kirby stuff. Like Steppenwolf?
Yeah, and again, there's still a lot to like in the Justice League movie, I'll be fair. Like, there really is. There's a bunch I enjoyed about it. But just overall, I just left going like, man, I really hope DC figures this shit out someday.
Yeah. No, me too.
I hope it sticks, you know?
Yeah. And then Infinity War came out. I'm like, oh, this is how you do Justice League. it was sort of like, this is how you take like a huge like batch of characters and make and like have like world ending stakes and make it work over the course of 3 hours.
The inherent problem that DC managed to make for itself was that they started going, we should do shared universe stuff late if they see it as a competition. And instead of going, let's just do a bunch of really good like Wonder Woman type single movies for everyone, they decided to rush it. Like, I think, and that's what makes Avengers Infinity War works, right? Like, if they didn't have to introduce half the cast in the movie, but we'd lived with them some, and we'd seen them some, and they'd already, you know, like leading up to the first Avengers movie, like, if there were strands that the fans could connect themselves, and you could see, and all this stuff, like, then you can go ahead and just pull in characters.
Right.
But, of course, you know, Justice League as, like, the fourth movie, essentially. Third movie? Third movie.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth. Because Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, Wonder Woman, and then Justice League. As the fourth movie of the franchise, you know, obviously it's not going to compare to the depth that you can do with something like Infinity Wars, which is, like, what, the 19th?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's unfair to compare them.
Yeah, I really did think, like, I saw some sort of some negative reviews of Infinity War. And I get it. It's not for everyone. But some of the negative reviews sort of said, we don't even, these characters just kind of show up and do things. It's like...
Oh, well, there was that one New Yorker review that was just complete fucking, like, and again, for people who were like, oh, well, they shouldn't let these people, here's the problem. Movie reviewers, as you know, and as I know, because we've both been there, you don't get to pick the movies you review. Almost ever. Mm-hmm. You just don't. I mean, when I was reviewing movies, I mean, I could say no to certain things, but you kind of almost never did, because then you were like, well, next time they want something, they'd be like, this guy, because he's a pain? You know what I mean? Like, that's how I ended up seeing fucking Lone Ranger. Like, I didn't want to go see that thing. And, God, I still resent it. But you try to go in as fairly as possible. You try to go in as fairly as possible. Anyway, because that's your job. But I can imagine, like, if you haven't seen these things and you didn't want to do it, but you were forced to do it, and the New Yorker's just like, fuck you, go see this movie. Write about this fucking movie. I can see where, unfortunately, the go in as positively as possible just takes a big hit.
Mm.
Now, could you have written that review a lot fairer? And been like, you know, yeah, I suppose if you've seen the other 18 movies, this wouldn't be a problem, but it isn't a standalone film. And review it from that angle, that would be an interesting thing. Like, you know, not blaming it for being a standalone film, but discussing what it means that it can't be a standalone film. Yeah. And what does that mean from the cinema? Like, there's a really interesting discussion and review to be had there, but he didn't do it. He went for the cheap shot that ended up making no sense to anyone. So, well played.
Right.
But, but again, I understand how it happened, you know? And, like, I feel a little, I don't know, not bad for him, but just, like... You took the cheap way out on that. You really did. And I get why. I'm just sorry you did it.
Yeah. I'm with you. And I think it's much more useful, and I've said stuff like this before, but it's real. I mean, I think it's time to think of, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe as a gigantic mega budget television show, and you're watching episodes, and the phases are like seasons.
What they're doing has never been done in cinema before to this degree. Never.
Yeah, exactly.
They are in uncharted territory, and they are. I think you're absolutely right. They're doing it like comics or like a TV show, where, but it's also different than that because, like, you can pick any strand and watch 99% of it without seeing anything else. Like, you can go from, like, watch the three Iron Man films without watching any Avengers movies, and there's enough in Iron Man 3 that you can get it. Like, oh, this is what happened. Yeah. Like, something happened and it gave him PTSD. The Captain America stuff, you're in shakier ground.
Yes.
But I also think that's just because as much as they tried to position Iron Man as the linchpin of the Marvel Universe, it's actually Captain America, and that's the problem for just watching just the Captain America films.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also always more rewarding to watch all of them, and that's the thing, right? Like, any of the series, you have to take into account the big crossover bits, because the characters appear and generally have an arc in those. But if you're just watching the Captain America films, and you're like, okay, well, then there's Civil War, and, well, now I don't know who these characters are, and I should, that's where you hit the trap. You know what I mean? Like, can you watch the first two Guardians movies without watching anything else? Of course. Can you watch the third without watching Infinity War? Maybe not.
It would not. Yeah, maybe, probably not. We'll see. We shall see.
Right. But the risk is, if you need Infinity War, well, now you can't watch Infinity War and just watch the Guardians movies. Like, there's not enough meat on those bones to get you through. So, and there's the trap, right? Suddenly you're like, well, I have to watch all these movies. And again, they're generally fine. Like, there are ones you can totally skip. Like, I think there is a core set. You know what I mean? Like, you could pretty much watch, like, I don't know, like, the first Iron Man, the first Captain America, maybe, you know, Thor, and then go to Avengers, and then go from Avengers to, like, Captain America 2, and then, like, Avengers 2. You know, like, I mean, you can watch very few of them and get all of the bones you need.
Right.
But it is still an investment, and I mean, again, that's for selling tickets and selling DVDs, like, that's great for them. But I also think as a viewer, it is interesting to see from that TV angle that it is very rewarding. Like, you watch these 19 films, you see these little connections, and, you know, like, it's an interesting model, and everyone's trying to copy it, and no one has. And I think it's just because everyone else is trying to copy it quickly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think it requires a degree of patience. And I think in some cases, I have a feeling this is partly the product of some degree of luck. Like, just the stars kind of align to help make these things happen with the Marvel movies. So, yeah. I mean, I'm talking out of my ass here, but
at the beginning, there's a bunch where in the beginning they were not. They were not planning this to be, you know, the first Iron Man movie was not, and now we're going to do 27,000 movies. Like, that wasn't what they were doing.
Right, exactly. And of course, there are some movies that came out around that time. Like, there are two different Hulk movies, one of which is nominally, I guess, involved, like the Ed Norton one.
Oh, it is. I think it is.
That is part of the whole MCU. But you can see they had a very different idea, you know, you can see how their style evolved very quickly.
Recently, how they moved away from... Oh, sorry, yeah, no, the shift to Ruffalo is great. But you can also see how they got to a place where they were willing to move away from all of these movies have to sound the same and have to look the same. You know what I mean? Like, the last set of them has been more, well, now we can actually let people do stuff because everything's established.
Exactly, yeah. Precisely.
And I think going forward, we'll see even more of it. Yeah?
I was just going to say, I'm not sure if you have seen the most recent Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I have not.
Oh, I have not. Okay, so they actually mentioned Thanos by name.
Which is going to be weird, because, I mean, that they're setting themselves up for having to be in this weird place of, like, I don't know, hopefully they understand when the movie, like, what the timing is of the next movie before they keep going.
Yeah, me too.
Because, they are in a rock and hard place situation, right?
Yeah. It's very hard to talk about what I think they might do without having seen this, because this does something kind of unexpected.
You can go ahead and
Or maybe
me
not
out,
too
yeah.
unexpected. Basically, at the end of the previous episode, Talbot absorbs the gravitonium.
Was basically graviton, and, yeah.
Yeah, and saves the day. And in this one, they basically go up to the ship. And he takes it. He turns into a supervillain. He essentially.
Sure, Graviton. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He essentially. Yeah. Exactly. Well, maybe it's not that unexpected at all. His sort of paranoia is sort of natural paranoia and rigidity, sort of becomes he becomes like just a complete villain, and basically he says can the Confederacy, what are you protecting us from? And the Confederacy says, well, you know, we always said we were going to protect Hydra, we were going to protect the Earth. But frankly, the threat you're facing right now, it's a guy named Thanos. We can't do anything. And so Talbot is saying, I'll take care of this Thanos asshole. So I don't know. Maybe in the finale, he'll just die. Maybe he'll be one of the cult.
Well, and that's the thing. But I mean, that'll be my problem again. Like, if they have another season, my big worry is, like, I don't imagine that they're going to let a year pass between these two movies.
Right.
But if they don't, then we have S.H.I.E.L.D. coming on in September, And we have Avengers 4 coming out, like, you know, again, at the end of their season, next season. So if they're like, oh, all these people vanish, then they're going to have to do a whole season with all these people vanished. And if the next movie is like picks up like a minute later, it, oh, God, like, I don't know. Like, hopefully they know something we don't. And I assume that they do in terms of some of the timing.
I'm going to assume they do as well. But, yeah, I see the problem.
Yeah, it's a weird issue. And it's going to give away stuff about the movie.
Yeah, maybe.
And I wonder
maybe
if this is why they're like, maybe this isn't. Well, I wonder if this is part of why they're like, they might not be renewing it.
Right, right. Because they may have just written themselves into the most bizarre corner of all.
Right. Aww. And wouldn't it be weird if the show ended with, and here's our tie into the movie, and just never mind?
Yeah. A bunch of people just vanished, just floated away into ash.
Yeah.
Like it'll be that same special effect, but on like a TV budget.
Yeah, I'm really kind of curious now to see how they deal with this.
Well, why does our dying look slightly shittier? No, you're right. That's if they pull something off, I'm going to be very impressed. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was amazed that they began to tie it in, because I thought to myself, surely they're just. I thought they're probably just going to ignore it, and maybe
right,
because
they could have.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. Right, they could have. Right, they could have just played with the timing a little bit and just ignored it, and no one would have blinked.
Yeah. But this right now, this almost feels. It almost feels like some first season nonsense, like. Oh no, we have to clean up after Thor. Of course.
Yeah, it's very weird, and it's just Yeah, I don't know. Oh, something else just real quick. I haven't seen like I'm like a week or so behind easily. But you know, Timeless.
Oh
it
yes.
It's interesting to me to watch the tone of Timeless slide slowly almost towards Legends.
Yeah, I was thinking that myself.
And is that just the thing with time travel shows now, that like at a certain point we just get ridiculous? Is that just our mode?
Right. Yeah, I think there's a recognition of the absurdity in time travel, especially if you're always going to the past and having to like dress up and so I do like the fact, and the notion that whenever you're there, you're like in a risky position, so you're always, the chances of you screwing up are high, so let's just lean into that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I do love that they are brave in a way that even Legends isn't, with the, we're just going to rewrite history every week.
Yeah, I do enjoy that too. That is, like when they sort of like realize that there's like various things changed. That's gonna be interesting. I have not seen the most recent episode, I think, but it's weird. But it's weird watching the show now that Legends has just gone so full out crazy.
Yeah.
And Timeless, even though it's sliding more that way, it still feels, really staid by comparison. Like it felt like the first season felt really kind of invigorating. Like,
I don't know, I still really like it, and I love that, like, the old crew in the Lifeboat are just so used to this. And so as they take new people back, we're like, well, what's your plan? It's like, you know, I'll steal a car, steal some clothes. Like, whatever, that's how we do it.
Oh, yeah.
Also, it was like, a couple weeks ago where they're like, they were, you know, going on, like, a little mini mission in the present. And they
yes.
were all suddenly shocked that they could just use cell phones. They're like, we never get to actually do this. That's right. That's awesome. We can actually keep in touch.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
I think it's this
yeah,
week
no,
they're actually going to the 80s, by the way.
That'll be fun. Didn't they sort of say, wasn't that part of the deal with the first season that they didn't come, that they were never, never mind. I'm not thinking that correctly. Okay, 80s is good.
I think the first season they tried to go bigger. I mean, obviously, you know, with money reductions and all that, I think they're. But it's also, I think that going to the 80s is not only cheaper, but it's a little goofier. It's a little more. I don't want to say fan servicey, but it is.
Yeah,
and not
exactly.
in a bad way. You know, not that that's like a terrible thing to do, but that is definitely a thing that they did.
Cool. So tell me about tell me a little bit about Day of the Doctor,
Oh, that's right.
which you
So
have been
I'm
reading.
reading. Yeah, we talked about like the new Target books, and I read Rose, which Russell Davies wrote, and I really liked it.
Right.
And I'm reading now The Day of the Doctor, which Moffat wrote, and this is Moffat's first full novel. And at times it shows. I'm trying to decide whether Moffat's "Look at me, I'm clever" is more annoying in prose or in his Doctor Who episodes.
Okay.
Because no, he's taken what, I mean, it is a fairly Day of the Doctor, you know, as I'm sure you remember, is a weirdly complex episode, but if you just watch it, it feels very simple.
Now,
There's a whole lot of like.
because there's a name, time, and Day of the Doctor. What happens in Day of the Doctor again?
Day of Doctors the
Which one is
50th.
that one? Ah, okay. Yep.
It's the 50th anniversary episode, so it's the War Doctor. It's, you know, three
Right.
doctors at once. And again, so it's a fairly complex actual story, but he manages to visually show it to you very quickly and very easily. And in this, like, A, he has like every chapter, like they're numbered out of order, and at first it's very obvious, like they're numbered for like what doctor it is. But like they're not saying that, they're just acting like it's out of order because of reasons. And in between each one, there's kind of this quote-unquote live feed of someone who's writing to you directly live while you're reading it through psychic paper to like comment on stuff and be
Okay.
like, "Here's the trick we're pulling," which gets a little obnoxious
Jesus,
fairly quickly.
Moffat. Sorry.
And just things like, you know, well, because this is like the doctor keeping these diaries or some shit, and these are the excerpts from these doctors' papers, which is what you're reading, and you know, various doctors are narrating it, different bits. So it's like, oh, you can feel like, oh, maybe it's the War Doctor, maybe it's this doctor narrating. But there's also this weirdness of, and he comes out and says it, in fact, that once the doctors start talking to each other, that they all. That they don't refer to each other as like the ninth doctor, the tenth doctor. It's just the doctor said, and then the doctor said, and it's like, you know, you have to pay attention to figure out who's. And I'm like, why? Why are you actively making this harder? Just to be cute?
Okay.
It's
Right.
actually like just making it a little worse. And with the interruptions and the constant like, look at this. This is confusing. They keep trying to call it out to make it feel like it's more confusing than it is. It actually is taking a fairly straightforward story and making it worse.
That
Now,
is, that
for all that, it's
sounds.
still a lot of fun. It still moves decently, but there's just a bunch of it where it's just like, meh. You're kind of screwing yourself up here.
So it sounds like pure Moffat, like in his purest
It
form.
kind of is like, and he actually adds a river, so like he adds a bit for backstory, which he didn't need for why the Tenth Doctor is in England looking for Zygons in the first place. And
Oh.
like how he got to the point of hanging out with Elizabeth. And I'm like, you don't actually need that. You could have just dropped in. You really could have.
Yeah, the whole point there is like, who cares? You know, one of the things I love about, especially with the Doctor, is that because he lives so long and loops around in time so much, that there's all kinds of like bizarre details about his life that you don't want the backstory for. It's just like,
Right.
oh, of course, why wouldn't you be married to Queen Elizabeth? You know, just all that kind of stuff. And it's one of those cases where getting actual story on it is like,
Well,
nope, that's not
and what's
necessary.
annoying about it is that the story starts with like the Tenth Doctor and River Song, and him going on about River Song for a little bit. I'm like, did we really need to add River to this? Like, did we? Did we really?
It's Moffat. You always need to add River Song to it.
But the problem is she mentions that like, oh yeah, no, I have to go because I have to like I'm getting hired by these people to go like deal with some unsealed like sealed library. And it's like, okay, but we've seen that between like right before the library, we know what she was doing, we know who she was doing it with. She told us this, and then he actually did write that scene with the 12th Doctor.
Right.
13, right? Like he actually did
Yeah.
write that.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, that episode.
And so now you're like, wait, how does this fit in? Like she was going there and she wasn't in the TARDIS, and then somehow she goes back to the TARDIS, even though she doesn't take it there, and then runs into like he actually fucked up his own continuity.
That's annoying.
And again, the whole thing is like rivers, like, oh, there's some, you know, maybe some Zygons. And, you know, can you go check this out? And the doctor's like, okay, and so he goes back, and it's like, and this is how he goes and checks it. It's like, but it really is, like, completely unnecessary. Like, it doesn't, it tells you why he's there, but it doesn't matter, and it puts a lampshade on the fact it doesn't matter.
Ah, right.
It's, there's a bunch of that. You know, it's like, he adds bits where, because you remember, it's the 50th, and you go and, like, oh, Claire's teaching it at the school where, you know, the original two companions and his granddaughter, you know, were at in the first episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the first doctor, you remember this? Yes?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Okay. And at the time, everyone's like, oh, well, they don't even mention these two. Like, did they go back to the school or what? And apparently, like, this one mentions, because the person who answers that phone, remember, like, he starts by, like, the 11th doctor calls, and he's like, you know, some teacher comes into Clara's classroom. He's like, somebody called for you. It's like, your doctor? And he says, you have to go meet him somewhere.
Okay.
And it's a cute little thing. But in the book, this guy knows who the doctor is. Because, like, the person running the school is that original companion.
Oh. Okay.
And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Like, again, it's just, it's one of these, like, stop, you're out-clevering yourself.
Oh, you're dropping out. I can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just saying, he kind of out-clevers himself a few times.
Right, yeah.
And so, like, I'm still enjoying it, but there are bits where it's just like he's fighting a really well-done episode and making it worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'll probably still read it.
Oh, okay, I think it's still
it
worth
like
reading just to see that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not as good. Like, Rose, I definitely recommend.
Yeah, I mean, it's Russell Davies, like, I mean, you know, Moffat loves playing games, but Russell Davies has, like, such, I love the way he does characters. I love his grasp on characters and his empathy.
Right.
So that's, yeah.
Again, so the stuff with Mickey alone makes the stuff worth it. And he tosses in, like, at least one scene that he didn't do in the episode that's actually a weird extra bit that you don't need and makes things more confusing in the episode it would have. He was right to not do it, but in the book it actually works, and I thought that was really interesting.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
so
well,
there's just, like,
I
a little bit extra. But anyway, we're coming close to the hour mark, and we're having audio issues, so we should probably stop and play some music.
Right. Okay, well, next time maybe I'll talk about... there are two new shows on Stars, Sweet Bitter and Vita. I won't belabor this right now, but Sweet Bitter is the first episode was kind of boring. It's about a young white girl from Ohio who starts working at a restaurant in New York City. I think it's like White Girl Ratatouille. I'm not quite sure. And the other one is called Vita, and Vita is about two young Latino women who come home. Their mother has died, and they get home to this. It's a neighborhood. I think it's in Los Angeles. It's being rapidly gentrified, and the mother owns a building with a bar. And when they come there, they meet their mother's roommate, a very masculine-looking woman named Eddie. And they suddenly and it's weird because it's one of those things where they keep on going, oh yeah, it's her roommate, even though it's obviously not a roommate. And then they discover, of course, when it comes time to look at the will, that this is their mother's wife. And it's a great, like, the first episode was so good. It's one of my favorite things I've seen in a long time. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, we can talk more about those next week. And we'll have some other stuff. But for now, what do you say?
Now.
Music?
Music!
Woo!
Woo-woo.